نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم. سورة فاتحة is called the Ummul Quran, foundation of the entire book, the basis, the foundation, the nucleus. It's also called Surah Al-Dua, Ta'lim al-Mas'ala. It teaches us how to petition Allah Ta'ala, how to talk to Allah Ta'ala, how to petition Allah Ta'ala. So what is contained in the entire Quran Sharif is as though condensed in Surah Fatiha. There must be something very magnificent of the Surah Fatiha, because a surah like the Surah Fatiha was not in any of the past scriptures, though they were heavenly scriptures, but they were not found. Then again we look at the same surah, right? The hadith says that I have divided the surah between me and my servant. وَهَذَا لِعَبْدِي وَلِعَبْدِي مَا سَأَلْ. So the first portion is the praise of Allah Ta'ala, Alhamdulillah, Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim, Malik Yawm al-Din. إِيَّاكَ نَعْبُدُ, it's between me and my servant. And إِهْدِنَا الصِّرَاطُ الْمُسْتَقِيمُ to the end is for my servant. هَذَا لِعَبْدِي وَلِعَبْدِي مَا سَأَلْ. This is purely for my servant, and he will receive what he asks for. So this dua that is contained in Surah Fatiha starts off with Ihdina Sirat al-Mustaqim, show us the straight path. In every department of life we need the direction of Allah Ta'ala. Anything we're doing, with the direction of Allah Ta'ala, that becomes a success. Without his direction, it's a failure. So anything that you can think about, you need his guidance. Right. Getting into a marriage, then you got his guidance, then that marriage is a success. If you just did it spontaneously, then it's a gamble, it can work out, it may not work out. You may regret, alright, why I did this. So therefore, Deen would recommend two things. One is you make mashwara, and the second thing is you beg Allah Ta'ala istikhara salatul hajat. Both you have to do simultaneously. You will beg Allah Ta'ala's help and you will consult. Not just consult, and you will not just make istikhara. Here again people go wrong. Istikhara is done for things that are permissible, not for things that are wajib and farz. Wajib, farz, mustahab, you will not make istikhara for. Because the permission has already been given to you by Rasulullah s.a.w. Now, you don't need to ask whether I must do it or not do it. Because it's already been instructed, do it. So now you don't have to ask for further permission. Yes, you can make istikhara, that this is a wajib action. Must I do it now or must I do it later? Like I need to go for Hajj, right? So you're making istikhara. Do I need to go in the first flight or the second flight? That's alright, that's a permissible thing. But whether I must go for Hajj, when it's faras upon you, you don't want to make istikhara for that. Person is in line for marriage and he can't resist the temptation. And he can't resist it, it is compulsory for him to get married. Now he can't make istikhara whether he should get married. He can't subject that marriage to his father's approval, because now it's wajib for him. Like namaz is compulsory, do you subject the performance of the namaz to someone's permission? No, I have to do it. So marriage is compulsory and you can't resist, and you know you're going to fall into haram. Then you say, no, you need to get married. The right thing is you consult with your parents, they give you the blessings, they give you some advice, very good. But they are stopping you when you got the means, got everything, and they are stopping you from getting married, then this is wrong. Now, What is going on now presently is their minds have become commercialized. So they think about commercial values. All the time, commercial values. So there was a woman doctor, right? So I asked her husband that she mustn't practice. You got enough? Allah Pak is keeping all, seeing all well. So she mustn't practice. But now, there is no limit in wealth. You got 50,000, you want 100,000. 100,000 to 200,000. They're earning quite well. Between them, they're earning quite well. She got some property or something, and he's got something as well. So they're running well. Now, when I mentioned this to the boy, that she mustn't be working, mustn't be in the workplace, she must be at home. So the mother-in-law phones up. So you stop my daughter-in-law from practicing. I said, yeah. So what's the problem? So I said, studying the firm. But now she's got a profession. Why must she be stopped? I said, Ben, you understand that you are not the mother. You don't have the right to instruct. You're not this child's mother. So why are you pushing her off? So I could have given the answer in a pure, dignified way. But this one year was overstepping the mark. She's looking at the money. Now this person will turn money, become a gold mine. My son will become wealthy, I'll be thrown in. So that's what she was looking at. And I told her, boy, you know, you stay in your place. You're not the mother of this child yet. The mother can direct her. You just keep quiet. So sometimes a straight answer has to be given. Now people feel, oh, you must be cute, you must be very polite. Not at all times. At times you have to be firm. See, Hazrat Rasulullah SAW was speaking about lost property. So, dhallatul ghanam. Normally, when it's related to animals, you call it a dhalla. It's lost, right? If it is not an animal's property, like a shoe or something, then you call it lukta. So when it's called a lukta, and if it's an animal, you call it a dhalla. So he asked about a dhallatul ghanam, a sheep or a goat that's lost. So there'll be some explaining what should be done, right? And then he went on asking the second thing and the third thing until he came to dhallatul ibil. When he asked about the camel that is a lost property, the Nabi Sam got disappointed. He said, ma laha wala, ma laka waliha, ma laka walaha, laha hiza'uha wa siqa'uha. How does that relate to you? How does this relate to you? Because a camel is strong enough to defend itself, and it's also capable of continuing without water for several days. It can continue. So why are you so interested about this? So yeah, Nabi Sam had spoken to him in a liberal, firm way. In firm words he had spoken to him, right? Now it wasn't his habit to speak like that. But here, on this occasion, he had to speak a little bit firmly, strongly. As Shaykh ul-Hind rahmatullahi, that's like a master in the science of hadith, Quran Sharif, etc. He's a master. Everybody relates to him. So he explains the hadith and he says, so we understand from this hadith, when it's an occasion to be disappointed and to express disapproval, then you should be expressing it. It's an occasion to express disapproval, disappointment, then you must express it. See, Nabi Samas, can you find a person with greater manners? إِنَّكَ لَعَلَىٰ خُلُقٍ عَظِيمٍ. That you are on a very high standard of character. But this was an occasion we had to express his disapproval. That this person is asking out of line. When he's asking out of line, I need to get him straight. So when you need to get him straight, you need to show that what you're asking is not right. See? So it's related to the situation where you can express your disapproval. It's your bidding, right? And for example, if your father is lying on the bed, you will press his feet, carry on sleeping, right? Then if it is your uncle, you will show him respect, but not to the level that you will show respect to your father. But then if it's a stranger and mistakenly got onto your bed, then perhaps with a little bit of respect, this is my bed, can you sleep elsewhere? I'll take this like as though it's an ishtima, you know, all beddings aligned. Right? It's because now you want to know, you're talking about a bed now, where it can happen. So take an ishtima, all beds aligned. So it's a stranger, perhaps he came into the wrong place, so you got him up, sorry, this is my place. But if it is that a dog came and slept in your place, hey, get out of here! Now, why is this type of an attitude? Why do you show this? Because that thing understands that language. So you will show that animal that type of attitude, you will show that approach. And your father, he requires a certain type of respect, so you will show it to him. Now, when people don't understand this, then the right thing is to ask, all right, how do you approach this situation? How do we approach this situation? Should we be rough and impolite and aggressive in every situation? Or some situations we need to be polite, and some situations we need to be a little bit firm and strong. What do we do? So you need to learn these things. You can't, you know, be the same in every situation. Some places you'll be firm and strong, and some places you'll be very polite. One person came to Saharanpur, and for about a whole week or something, he is pestering Hazrat Muaz Saharanpuri Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. So there is a masla in besties ever, and now this person seems to be like a professional person, well dressed, and he's speaking in that language as well. So he says to Mawlana Saharanpuri Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh that there are some masayas that I can't understand. What masla? That if the woman is in the east and the husband is in the west and they get a child, so we will not just say that the child is illegitimate. Tomorrow I tried to explain, but he won't listen. He's giving a proper explanation, but he won't listen. In the meanwhile, Al-Mu'ad Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah had to come into Saharanpur for some of his own work. Right? As he's in Saharanpur, so he saw Mawla Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, and someone explained to him that this is the author of the Kitab. So he can refer it directly to him. So now he's asked Mawla Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh that this masla here, woman in the east, man in the west, and they got a child, so we will not call the child an illegitimate child. So Mawla asked him, you didn't understand the masla, or you didn't understand the reasoning behind the masla. No, I understand the masla, but I didn't understand the reasoning. What's the proof? What's the reasoning? How you come to this? How you arrive to this masla? I don't understand it. So Mawla asked him, all right, you know some masayas? Yes. Now, all those masayas that you know and that are contained in this book here, do you know all the reasoning and all the proofs? He said, no, I don't know. Mawla says, he only said that I got all the reasoning, I got all the proof, I'm going to try him out, right? Masla for wuzu, there's four for us. So what is the reason? Well, not five, not three. I would have questioned him properly. So Mawla asked him, all right, see, you don't have the reasoning and the proof for all the other masail. So this one, you add it to that one. Now what you don't know, just add it there. Just put it into that one. So he sat down and he's asking, and he's, so then he, that one ended, that man went away. When he went away, so the next person came in. Maybe a day later or something, the next person came. Now he's acting even more professional, more dignified in the way he's addressing himself. So he's acting even more professional than the first person. Now he comes in and he says, yeah, he's coming in, you know, the type of approach he's giving, yeah, it's people, they don't have the respect for the ulama-i kiram, and this can't go on, you know. They must respect the ulama-i kiram. So I propose that we have a big jalsa. And in the jalsa, you can answer all these people's ishkalat. So once and for all, everything will be ended. Don't worry, I'll be on your side. So Mawla gave him an answer. He said, you see, before me, there was another group of ulama-i kiram that is called the Imam-i Mujtahideen, four imams, right? Before them were the Sahaba-i kiram, right? Radiyallahu anhum, ajma'in. And before them was the Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, right? And people have got problems with the imams. They speak out, there's a fraternity that speaks out against the Sahaba Kiram. And unfortunately, there's a group that speaks out against Hazrat Rasulullah. So now let's work in sequence. First comes the Nabi, then the Sahaba Kiram, and then the imams. So you arrange for a jalsa, right? You arrange for a jalsa. Don't worry, I'll be on your side. I'll be on your side. And whoever's got any problem with Hazrat Rasulullah, he must present his problems and it will be answered. And then the Sahaba Kiram, then the imams, and then it's my turn. So then he says to Ma, but what's wrong if we have this jalsa? You know? If we can have this jalsa, what's wrong? So Mullah asked him, is this a command or is it a suggestion? So Mullah, how can I command you? It's just a suggestion. So Mullah said, alright, you've given your suggestion, very good, mashallah. Now, when you have given your suggestion and you understand that this is not an obligation that I have to fulfill, so it's my prerogative whether I answer you or I don't answer you. You have done your work, now you can leave. You have done your work. Your work was to give a suggestion, you give a suggestion. My work, I've got the right to accept your suggestion or to reject it. So if I feel that it's right, I will accept it. If I feel it's not right, I will reject the thing. So now, he says, Mullah says, you know, but this is a suggestion. So Mullah says, alright, leave it as a suggestion. It's not a command, it's a suggestion. And you don't have the right to command me. So now you can leave. Now it's my time to work. He says, ye pure hafte se mere dimag ko kha raha tha. And yeah, you sorted him out one shot. So now some people, they're so thick, that they need this type of answers to put them in place. Well, I have to give that type of an answer to this type of a situation for that person to come right. So people misconstrue this, you know, must be very polite, must be well-mannered, etc. Must do all these things here. But they don't realize that there are situations where you have to be a little bit firm and strong. Right? A child is in the swimming pool, you know, the father knows that the child doesn't know how to swim. The father is at a distance. He's at a distance, so he'll shout him, come here quickly, I'll smack you just now. So he'll instruct him to come back. So the child will get a shock and he'll turn. Then with the father explaining, by, see, this is the point, if you go here, then not to return. A point of not no return. So, Jazakallah Abba, you saved my life. But at that point, he didn't realize that he was going towards his destruction, towards his ruin. And now if the father had spoken to him in a polite way, Abba, you know, beta, mera beta hai, so nice, you're so cute, don't do this. Abba, don't worry, I'll go in. And then it's too late. So there are situations where you need to be firm. There are situations where you need to be very friendly and very polite. Now, not every person has got the ability to understand the situation. Everybody doesn't have that ability. When he doesn't have that ability, then he must not just do it. Understand how it works, what's the approach, what is supposed to be used, what is not supposed to be used. There is the Sulh Hudaybiyah, the peace treaty of Hudaybiyah. Right? And the negotiations are carrying on between the Quraysh and the Muslims. So the person that is negotiating the terms on the side of the Quraysh, he says to Rasulullah SAW that, you know what, see, you got people from all walks of life, all tribes, and they may betray you at the last moment, they may cheat on you at the last moment. So you don't get deceived with these people here. Now they're talking tough, but when it comes to crunch time, they may just leave you in the lurch and they may just escape. Right. Abu Bakr Siddiq is near Rasulullah SAW, and he was very vulgar towards him. Use the word, it would seem very vulgar. He said, what do you think of yourself? Me, I will leave Rasulullah SAW, never, it won't happen. But he was very vulgar to him. That man just had to just remain closed, shut. But that was the answer for that occasion. You're talking of jihad, talking of lives, right? Sparing lives and taking lives. And that occasion required that he needs to be very firm, a little bit vulgar, So that person, he just keeps quiet immediately. Now, this is an approach. See, now, you may be an educated person, you may be wealthy, rich, but that doesn't mean that because you are at that position, then you know how to approach the king of the time, right? Imam Saraghsi, rahmatullahi, the king of the time, was advising him, tell him something. Imam Saraghsi, rahmatullahi, is a great, very great faqih. So he turned around and explained the king, see, your approach is not right. See, he tells him, see, if you're going to use authority and stamp authority onto people, then because of your position and your authority, people will feel suppressed. They won't say anything. But their hearts are not with you. It is just because of your authority that they are respecting you. Their minds and their hearts are not with you. But contrary to that, if you explain to them nicely, properly, and convincing arguments and proofs, so their hearts will take to you. And when the hearts take to you, they'll be supportive of you. Now the king got very disappointed with this approach. This man here, my subject, and he's advising me. He became too big now. He is thinking now that he's too big for his boots and he's advising me. Now Saraghsi said, see, this is a fact. You want to maneuver people with your authority, you want to suppress them with your authority, it's not going to last. It'll last for a few days. They'll please you for that moment. After that, they'll forget you. So the right thing is convincing proofs, the right approach. The arguments will be understood well. They'll grasp it. And they will live with it. They will respect you. They'll learn to like you and respect you. So the king imprisoned him. Imprisoned him. I saw an abandoned well, those days now. Abandoned well, deep well, push him inside. But Imam Saraghsi's students didn't leave him even in that situation. They came on around the well. And approximately 6 volumes of his kitab was written in that state. He was dictating from the bottom. They were writing. Imam Ghazali, rahmatullahi, just adding to this. Imam Ghazali, sahab, rahmatullahi, so his life and where he went to study, etc. So highway robbers, they have caught him. So now he's thinking, you know, my 10 years of my life, I've gathered so much of information, all recorded. And these people will take it. It doesn't mean anything to them. They're going to destroy this. They don't need this type of information. They're going to destroy these things here. So, and 10 years of my effort is destroyed. So he went to the gang leader and he explained to him, see, this is 10 years of effort, very hard effort. With a lot of difficulty I've gathered all this information. So please, you can take the rest of the wealth, but this kitab was mine, just return it. So the gang leader, he laughed at Imam Ghazali rahmatullah. He says, what ilm you call this? That's all moved onto paper. That paper can be destroyed in the moment, fire something can eat the thing up, it's destroyed. That knowledge is knowledge which is preserved here, nobody can destroy it. Imam Ghazali rahmatullah took this very seriously. For the next year or 2 years, he went home, and all that he had learned in the 10 years, he saw that that's memorized properly in his mind, got it. So now it can't be changed, can't be altered now, according to history, and that thing can't be deleted now. So we are talking of Surah Fatiha, and I just spoke about a couple of points. You know, approach, what approach must be used, in which occasion, what approach must be used, and what approach mustn't be used. Sometimes a firm approach, and sometimes a very polite approach. One approach, not one and the same approach for every situation. So we look at Surah Fatiha again, look at it from a different angle. It's also called Ta'limul Masala. It teaches you how to ask, how to petition Allah Ta'ala. You want to be seen favorably, then you petition Allah Ta'ala in the correct manner, and you'll be seen favorably. Allah will look at you favorably as well. So it starts off with Ihdinas Sirat al-Mustaqim, show us the path, right? And I say that the path is required in every department, every facet of your life. Now let me just show you an example, right? To have the right guidance is required in every facet of your life. One person came here some years ago, 3-4 years ago. So he's explaining that it was a very good investment, and when I saw that investment was so lucrative, you know, very lucrative investment, it's giving about 35-40% returns in the year, annual, so much of returns is giving, 35-40%. So I thought about it, we discussed it with my wife. So we sold our house, we had a business, we sold that, and I took a loan from the bank, and I put all the 3 million into that investment. In 1 year's time, the thing just collapsed. And when it collapsed, I lost my house, I lost my shop, and I'm still owing the banks. Now you see, you need the guidance. And the guidance, for the guidance you need mashwara, and you need to ask Allah Ta'ala. You want to do it on impulse, you want to do it immediately, that this is the consequence. He lost his house, it was a freehold property, he lost that. He lost his shop, it was enough to carry him. And over and above, he is indebted to the bank. And they're not going to leave him. One person was here, so I said, I told him, you know, he became insolvent. I said, why don't you declare yourself insolvent? He said, no, these banks nowadays, they learned a new thing. What happened now? So now they'll refer you to these loan sharks. The bank will refer you to the loan sharks. Now, it's a matter of life and death what they can do. It becomes so dangerous, you see. For money, people do anything. So anyway, we're talking of ihdina sirat al-mustaqim, the right path. So the right path, the right approach is required in every facet of life. A doctor that is seeing a patient, he also requires the right guidance. If he's got the right guidance, then sometimes in 5 minutes he can sort the person out. And the doctor doesn't have the right guidance, he'll put him to this type of a scan, an MRI scan, whatever else. And after about a month, he'll come to the same conclusion. And here he's got the right guidance, Allah Baki just guided him. In 5 minutes' time, he'll just wrap the person out. Ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. You require that in marriage, you require that in your wealth and property, you require that in your deen. There isn't a facet in life that you don't require the guidance and the path that is right. In everything you require it. See this ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. Now you understand the goodness of this dua when you compare it Surah Fatiha. Fatiha means the opening chapter, right? So it's opening the Quran Sharif. Now you understand the beauty of this verse, of the surah, when you compare it with the opening chapter of the Bible. You look at Surah Fatiha, the opening chapter. Now look at the opening chapter of the Bible, right? In the opening chapter of the Bible, the dua that is made is, give us this day our daily bread. This is the dua that is made, give us this day our daily bread. Here, show us the right path. So, now, how can it work out for the person? Man, he is constipated, he wants bread. He's dying, he wants bread. So his greatest concern is his bread. And here you're asking for the path. You're asking for the path, that it's a very comprehensive word that you're asking for. And this man's figure is only about bread. You're asking for path, you're asking for path in this life. You're asking for the path in the hereafter. You're asking for the path in the grave. For any phase of your life, any phase of your life, you're asking for the right direction. So you're covered here, you're covered there, you're covered in the grave. All around you're covered. See the comprehensive nature. So these type of things are man-made. When it's a man-made, you'll find the flaws. If it's Allah Ta'ala's, then it's Allah Ta'ala's. If you try to find the discrepancy in Allah's word, you will be flawed. And here when it's a man-made thing, you will find the flaws. So, اِهْدِنَا الصِّرَاطَ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ صِرَاطَ الَّذِينَ أَنْعَمْتَ عَلَيْهِ. The path of the favored. So Allah Ta'ala is impressing upon us that you see, any science in this world, yeah, if it needs to be preserved, then you need two things. Now look at it, it's so comprehensive, but in the surah, Allah Baqir is teaching us, you want to preserve any science, right? You need to get two things right, and that science, inshallah, will be preserved. So, the two things that you require to preserve any science, one is, we need the right type of material. The literature, the material, that has to be right. The books, whatever. So you need to have that. And number two, the second thing that you require is a guide, an instructor, a teacher, a professor, a lecturer. We need these people. So you've got the literature, you've got the material, and you've got the person that is guiding you, now it's a complete job. But you've got one and you don't have the other, then you are in a dangerous position. You've got the literature, but you don't have the lecturer or the professor or the guide that can guide you through. Right? You want to go and learn a heart operation, how you do a heart operation, but you want to do it yourself. You didn't do medicine, but only books. Will any government in the whole world ever allow you to do it? And if you wish to go and do it after you've studied on your own, will they endorse it? They'll put you into jail. Won't that happen? Is not that a reality? So you need the information and you need a guide. Now when you got the right guide and you got the right information, you merge the both, the result is right. You're coming right. Right. And you want to do it your own way, then you're not going to get right. You're going to go off the course. See? So both have to be merged together to come to the right conclusions. So one is the book and one is the instructor. Right. In one zamana, it was the Rasulullah Pak system that will guide us, that will show us, right, this is the word of Allah Ta'ala and this is the meaning. Right? Because the word of Allah Ta'ala only says, perform namaz. It doesn't say that when you get into namaz, then this is how you should be going to toilet, then making wuzu, and then getting namaz. It doesn't show you the procedure. Does it? Show me one verse, it will show you the entire procedure of namaz. It doesn't show you the procedure. And the standing position should be reciting sana, and thereafter you're supposed to be reciting surah Fatiha, and then you're supposed to be going into the qiraat and the surah. So show me one verse in the Quran Sharif that will give you the entire illustration. So the wording of the Quran Sharif is going to be illustrated and detailed by Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Without that, you can't understand the Quran Sharif. It will have to be explained. So in life, you've got procedures for everything. It's what you're coming up to now. That everything has got a procedure, and that procedure must be followed. Whether you like it or you lump it, but you have to follow that procedure. You are pressing to go toilet, right? Pressing to go toilet. And you're thinking to yourself, now I'm going to go toilet, I may miss out the takbir ula. Right? So, one side you think of the takbir ula, but meanwhile, your stomach is rumbling, right? Rumbling. Gur 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 is making. Like you're just about to explode, you know? And you're forcing yourself to do the namaz. Just give me the takbir ula. Imam will read the namaz, sharpshoot. I'll get out of this. Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal says that namaz is not valid. Imam Malik Rahmullah says that namaz must be repeated. Imam Abu Hanifa Sahib Rahmullah says that it is makruh tahrimi. You're bordering on haram. So you may be absolved of the obligation, but you haven't got sawab. You have done something that was near haram, so you got a guna for that. So you went into namaz for what? You went into namaz to cleanse yourself, to get some reward for the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala. Here you went in and you came back with the wrath of Allah Ta'ala, with the displeasure of Allah Ta'ala. You gain anything. And the reason for not gaining the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala is you didn't follow the sequence. Sequence was, go toil first, relieve yourself, and then come in. And if you just got into namaz straight away, what has happened? Physically you're in namaz, mentally you're in the toilet. You're speaking to a friend, and his mind is a toilet. Right? Can you enjoy the discussion? You can't enjoy the discussion. How are you going to enjoy the discussion? You can see that his mind is elsewhere, and he's carrying on with the discussion. You're not going to enjoy the discussion. So there's a sequence. If you are extremely hungry, and it's namaz time, so the hadith will tell you, go and eat first, and then you perform your namaz. We were the Mufti Sahib Rahmatullahi on one occasion, so we're traveling now, the meals were ready, and it was namaz time. So Mufti Sahib Rahmatullahi was a very easy person to get along with, very easy. What a difficult person at all. No matter what happens, but you won't see him blowing his top. No. Now that's a sign of a very great Ahlullah. Whatever situation, but he's composed. He is not going to get upset, not going to shout, not going to pull the roof down. Sometimes it may be something that is also hurtful to him. He won't talk about it. So, but a very composed person, a person of great perfection. So when you've got that perfection, then that is visible through the person's behavior. Otherwise, everything, small thing, big thing, will trigger the person's anger. Now, that's a sign of a person being imperfect. There's some deficiency in the person. But when he's complete and perfect, then you don't see these things. So, now, because of that, he will be very simple, very straightforward. So, he's asking the satis, what should we do? Eat first or perform namaz first? Now, a lot of times, this type of things are to teach us. We are still young now. He's advanced, 8 years of age, we are 20, right? So he's advanced. He has to pass on the lesson to us. So the lesson sometimes is passed by telling you, and sometimes by a question. Right? Rasulullah is explaining a concept, right? And in the process of him explaining the concept, so he comes out, it's autumn, and he shakes the tree. Now tell me that, is there any leaf that is left on the tree? Nothing. So the namaz will do the same thing. Show me a tree that is identical to a Muslim. Right. So you see, it's a question and answer. So the teacher also needs to know the right type of approach. How the student will respond. He's responding or not. Or he's just taking it as a pastime, as an entertainment. So the way the teacher will handle it, you'll understand the sabak even better. But the teacher needs to be very well composed. Nothing is triggering anger, small things, this thing, that. I let it carry on. I must maintain my cool. I need to pass the concept. Right? That person comes right, he'll come right, he'll come right in his own time. I mustn't think that he must come right now. He'll come right, and in his own time he'll come right. Because you get different classes of students. Right? One class of student, he comes right straight away. One class of student, he comes right after 3 years. So you have to wait for him. Give him the time, give him a little bit of a respite. He'll come right, but he'll come right in his own time. See? So I'm talking of respite. I'm talking of sequence, right? So you got the food and you got namaz. So the Musab is asking now, what should we start off with first? So some bright spark, one of our satis now, he said, you know, kya karenge? Hum pehle namaz pad lenge aur phir itminan ke saath bed karke khayenge. We'll first perform our namaz, then we'll relax nicely and we'll eat comfortably. That was his answer. So Mustafa Muhammad says, Musalman kab itminan ke saath bed karke khata hai? Itminan ke saath to namaz padhta hai. Itminan ke saath to namaz padhta hai. Kahan dekha ke Musalman itminan ke saath bed karke khata hai? You don't see a Muslim relaxing comfortably and eating. But namaz, he's relaxed, he's very comfortable, very peaceful about the whole procedure. How he's going to toilet, how he's making wuzu, how he's getting to namaz, the postures, the recitation. There is calm. And other things, mundane, etc., all that he just passes through it. But the namaz is done very well. Now he's teaching us a lesson that this is how you go about doing this. Now, without the assistance of a guide, see what happens to us. You can make up a mess up. The whole namaz gets messed up. The Quran is teaching us about spending, right? يَسْأَلُونَكَ مَاذَا يُنْفِقُونَ. So again, when speaking about spending, then it's showing us the sequences, the procedure, what procedures you will use in spending wealth. So this verse comes in two places, يَسْأَلُونَكَ مَاذَا يُنْفِقُونَ وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ مَاذَا يُنْفِقُونَ. But both questions are different. Though the wording are the same, but the purport of the question is different. وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ مَاذَا يُنْفِقُونَ. In other words, he's asking, how much do we spend? How much do we spend? So the Qur'an says, قُلِ الْعَفْ. Again, the Qur'an says, is teaching procedure. What is more than your requirement, surplus to your requirement, that you give out in charity. You look at your own personal needs, your needs, the needs of your subordinates, you have seen to all that. Now you want to give in the path of Allah Ta'ala, you will spend in the path of Allah Ta'ala. See that? See sequence. See that? See, we have got three faculties in us, right? Every human being. One is the faculty of emotions, right? Then after the emotions is intelligence. And above the intelligence is the Sharia. Sharia is divine. So Islam has allowed you to express your emotions, right? So you can get married, you're expressing your emotions, right? It's a calamity, you're crying. So Islam is allowing you to express your emotions. It's a happy occasion, Eid day, you're showing some happiness and all that. So it's a happy occasion, you're showing some happiness. Islam has not discouraged this, it's encouraged it, right? On an Eid day, now you come in crying, all people have died now, have they only been alive now, and how they could have been enjoying. Now, it was an occasion to show some happiness. Now you don't think all about the Kabristan and all that too much. Then will this occasion be happy? Now they say, no, this year we're not having an Eid. But that's a Christian and a Hindu style. If someone passed away, then you don't have any Eid, you don't celebrate. That's this, I leave it to them. For in them, it's more formalities than realities. By us, it's reality. You go with realities, they go with formalities. So, I really mean they go by formalities, right? Someone passed away. So now he passed away on a Tuesday. So Sunday will be free. We'll have the whole funeral procedure. So put him in the mortuary, and then we'll do it on a Sunday. See? Now someone passed away and says, no, but in 2 weeks' time will be the son's birthday. So, all right, what will we do? We'll pull him in the mortuary for the 2 weeks. And then in the birthday, she will be coming and sitting on the chair. And she liked the cigarette, so we'll have the cigarette on her hand. And let the party carry on. After that, we'll do the funeral. So this is their life is just a formality. And our lives are governed by realities. So you can't compare standards. They're moving in a different direction. You're moving in a different direction. But overall, Islam has allowed you to express your emotions. Good food, we all crave for good food, right? Emotions again, So Islam has allowed you, not stopped you. But then Islam says that your intelligence must rule your emotions. Now, you're earning 10,000 rands, right? And you saw a jeans that is advertised for 9,500 rand. Without batting an eye, you bought that 9,500 rand. Now you're looking for rental money, you're looking for groceries, you're looking for bus fare, you're looking for your lights, your water, your wife, your medical bills. Nothing. Why? You expressed your emotions, but the emotions were supposed to be controlled by the intelligence. You don't give it an unbridled freedom. You use it within parameters. You've done this within parameters, you're not going off. But now you give it an unbridled freedom. Do what you want. Do as you please. You went and bust that money. Now how are you going to carry the other expenses? Then I'm going to look at his pocket. I'll be burning and I see them in luxury and enjoyment. I can enjoy whilst they are enjoying. See? So if you work within parameters, you've got no complaint. I'm not looking at anybody's pocket. I'm still happy. Still enjoying, still quite comfortable and relaxed. But the moment I'm looking at your money, then I have destroyed my happiness. When that money is going to come? When he's going to die, so I can get the money. When he's going to die, I'm going to get the money. See how your mind can work. And you see this insurance, right? A lot of times you have the same case. In the North Coast, there was a situation where the person claimed from the insurance. So, they were investigated the case. They found there was some discrepancy. So, alright, you see that this person passed away, right? This person passed away. And when he passed away, for example, he passed away in Stanger, right? And so they made a whole research. And in that finding of this, they found that this person, at the time that you say he wasn't there, because he was passing a certain toll gate at a certain time, that is not conforming with the details that you are giving. So then they found that there was something fishy, so they quizzed him, they kept on questioning him. So now this person was my father or something, whatever it was, and I was paying a heavy insurance for him. Very heavy insurance I was paying for him, 10,000 rands a month, because he's old now. But the man wasn't dying. He wasn't dying. Now I need a payout. You know, the thing was, he insured him for about 20 million rand. I'm paying 10,000 rand, 20,000 rand every month. The man is not dying. So we have to put him away to claim from the insurance. See, that happens now when you become enslaved to wealth, enslaved to all these type of things. And you'll do anything, any stupid thing, just to gain the control over that wealth. And then it's an embarrassment after that. See what you did to your father, you went to this person here, just for that wealth, that madness comes in. So emotions must be then controlled by intelligence. Right? Then intelligence must be controlled by the Sharia. You can't give the intelligence the unbridled freedom. You can't do it. You have to control it with the Sharia. Now, what's the reason for that? If there isn't a Sharia, then there is no law. There is no dignity. There is no respect after that. Right? One person wished to be intimate with his own mother. Sleeping with his own mother. So they approach him, bhai, kya hua? Dimag sahi hai? Alright. So he said, what's the problem? One day, I was entirely in my mother's self, right? Now only one organ is inside, so what's your problem? Well, he's using intelligence, can you flaw the intelligence? Can you say it's wrong? Once upon a time, I was entirely in her, and now it's just one organ that's in her, so what's this whole discussion all about? So, over the intelligence is divine Sharia. So we're talking about now procedures. The procedures have to be followed, right? So one is, how do you spend your money? Where? Say, are you going to spend the house? So surplus. You've seen to all your accounts, all your debts, everything you've seen. You've seen to yourself, you've seen to your subordinates. Now whatever is surplus, now you can give it out. Seen to your needs, immediate needs, your future needs, right? So you've seen everything. Now you're going to get into namaz, you're going to be relaxed. You're going to go home, you're going to be relaxed, right? You're going to go to your business, you're relaxed. But now you didn't follow a sequence and you just went and bust your money. And in the business, you're a brain wreck. The brunt of your frustration will be suffered by your own household. You're frustrated now. You've got no money now. You're frustrated, so someone has to catch the brunt. So your household, innocent people have to catch the brunt of your frustration. But why? Because you didn't follow sequence. Had you followed sequence, you would have been a nice person, comfortable person, relaxed person, spent where you're supposed to be spending. You're not going to have this problem here. But you just went wild. When you went wild, this is what happened. Then someone that was not deserving, he had to catch the brunt of your frustration. You see, so first emotions, feelings, etc. Then you get intelligence, and above the intelligence is the Sharia. The Sharia, you don't question the Sharia. Like the Sharia saying, I just explained, that you won't marry your mother, right? You won't ask the Sharia why. You know, the Sharia is divine. La yus'alu amma yaf'alu wa hum yus'alu. La yus'alu. Allah Ta'ala is not answerable to anybody. He will make the commands, and He is not answerable to anybody. Understand that. So why like this and why like that? That thing doesn't feature in the equation. You don't ask that question. You followed Him in principle, you understood this one God. After that, you don't ask these type of questions. Right? So now we're coming again back to the surah. Ihdina sirat al-mustaqim, sirat al-ladhina an'amta alayhim. Now, the Quran is alluding to two classes of people that went off the course. Right? They went off the course. So one class of people went off the course because of what? Because they had the information, they had the knowledge. Not that they didn't have the information, they had the knowledge, they had everything. But they were too proud to accept it. You had everything, but in spite of you having it, you were too proud to accept it. You don't want to grasp it. See, when one person came, but I think it was Friday or something. So he tells me, you know, this tasawuf is not for me. It's not for me. So I stop for a moment. Now I need to think who I'm talking to, then talk to his level. See? So I asked him, if tomorrow you come and tell me that namaz is not for me, then you know, what is the answer to this? Because he asked me for a solution. The tasawwuf is not for me, right? When he said, it's not for me, I kept quiet. He said, what is the solution to this? What is the answer to this? So when he said, what is the answer to this? Then I asked him, alright, someone says that namaz is not for me, then what is the answer to this? Can you give an answer yourself? It's not the right answer. Because it's an obligation, you just have to do it. So exactly the same tasawuf is for all of us. Right? But because we didn't understand it, therefore we think it's a difficult thing. Because we didn't understand it. We understand it, then we understand that there is nothing easier and more enjoyable than tasawuf. Right? If fiqh relates to the external self, then tasawuf relates to the internal self. And like there are obligations attached to the external, there are obligations that are attached to the internal self. So obligations, but now right through, physical and spiritual. Right? And I say, I explain him that there is nothing easier. It makes life so enjoyable, so happy. You can burst with happiness. All right, you just want to laugh. Really, you just want to laugh and laugh and laugh. But if you keep it out, you come across a verse of the Quran, say, Allah, so magnificent, man. Your glory, your greatness, so much, and you just want to burst out. But if you understand, you're in namaz, you can't do all these things there. You can't shout, you can't burst out laughing in namaz. But it's so magnificent. Your heart can't contain the glory of Allah. So much. It's so much. So I went on to explain to him, right? See, the concept of tawakkul, right? Trusting in Allah Ta'ala. Now, the wrong understanding, when you got the wrong understanding, then you will misconstrue this. You will say, no, just give all your money out and tawakkul ala Allah. Trust in Allah Ta'ala. So one student used to come to the madrasa selling some cars, some second-hand cars. So all the cars that are selling second-hand, you got tawakkul in the back. So I asked him, tell me, in all fairness, if you're driving a brand new Mercedes, you write a tawakkul behind. So because this is a jalopi, therefore you write tawakkul. So the tawakkul is the right. So really, I'm serious about it. We've got all these all broken cars. You drive there, you can't be selling these cars. So you got tawakkul Allah. But ask him, you got a brand new Mercedes, are you going to ride that? You see that unfairness. So because we've got a misunderstanding of tawakkul, therefore we will say that, abandon everything. That's not the meaning of tawakkul. Tawakkul means ajmilu fi talab wa tawakkalu alayh. That you take your means, whatever precautionary preventive measures you have to take, but let that be brief. And you trust entirely in Allah Ta'ala after that. Little bit, whatever you need to do, some running around, doorbag, little bit of running around, you have to do that, but your mind must be entirely in Allah Ta'ala. Now, we have reversed the whole thing around. Our whole strife and our struggle is behind the material. Little bit of tawakkul, Allah make it happen. Allah make it happen, huh? So all the effort is all in this direction, and then we are asking Allah Ta'ala. In the battle of Badr, imagine 300 people, ill-equipped, right? Ill-equipped, 300 people are going against an odd of over 1,000. All well-equipped, swords, armaments, everything they've got, right? Armors, everything they've got. And here is just 8 swords. And they're taking on such a crowd. So they took the precautionary steps, brief, right? And then they left and assigned themselves entirely to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And Allah ta'ala let them march over the army. Right? So you take your steps, you take your measures, and be brief, and then assign your affair to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala entirely. Now if you don't follow this procedure, then you're putting yourself into problems, and you're making the lives of people also miserable. Now you may ask, alright, how do you make a misery of yourself, and how do you make people's life miserable as well? Now look at this crisis, right, of this virus crisis. Yeah, see, just look at it, right? Now, people are complaining that it's better to be in a prison than to be in a private hospital. The type of treatment, you're being rough-handled. Patients come here back after they've gone to top hospitals, not ordinary hospitals, top hospitals. Rough handle, no proper treatment, no proper attention. So you better be at home or be in the prison than being here. You're tied up here, you can't do anything, and you're left at their mercy, they're coming, they're not coming. So the doctors, they have become paranoid because of what? Too much of reliance on the material, not trusting in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Too much of reliance on the material and not trusting in Allah ta'ala. Right, that's the first flaw. The second flaw in this whole thing was, You see, one is the guidance of Hazrat Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and one is the guidance of some medical people, right? Medical people saying distance, mask, all of this thing, right? And one is the guidance of Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Hazrat Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is saying that if you're going to misbehave, indecent behavior, shameless behavior, then this must happen. So if anybody is talking about the subject, he'll say mask and distance. But you may have never heard of anybody saying indecent behavior is the cause, so stop the indecent behavior. And I tell you, a good 90-95% is involved. You know, when I talk to youngsters under 40, I ask them, can anybody tell me that he wasn't involved in some porn, deliberately or by accident, but he wasn't. Everybody's face, I don't want to know, but the heads are bowed down in shame. Everybody's involved. Going to the malls, indecent behavior. Into the bazaars, indecent behavior. You got a clerk or you got a secretary, indecent behavior. So much of indecency. That has gone viral. So the virus became viral. In fact, what Allah Pak has sent is much less than what we deserve. It's gone so much out of proportion. Gone out of proportion, Allah Pak just give, وَلَنُذِيقَنَّهُمْ مِنَ الْعَذَابِ الْأَدْنَى دُونَ الْعَذَابِ. A small little... sample of the punishment. Small sample, but then get up now, get up, see what you're doing. See? So, where we're supposed to be relying on Allah Ta'ala, asking Tawbah, asking His forgiveness, number one. Number two, stopping ourselves, and stopping at least the people that we've got influence over. We're not doing that. Yes, but you must mask, you must distance, you must do this. Whereas the masking and the distancing, the experts themselves, they are at loggerheads. They got difference of opinion. Someone is saying right, someone is saying right. But with all the differences, we're still doing it. And here, the word of Rasulullah Wasallam, can you find a flaw in that? Maria Qibtiya, she lost a child. The child was in infancy, right? 15, 16 months, child was lost. So, Rasulullah Wasallam saw her, his family, so he saw her in a state of agony. So he asked her one day, that, don't grieve now, don't agonize, because Allah Ta'ala has got a midwife to see the child's milk in Jannah. And if you want to see the child, I will show the child to you. Now the answer, that was too beautiful. Maria's answer, I heard from Hazrat Yahya, was too beautiful. He says, Ya Rasulullah, I believe in your words. My eyes may be wrong, but I got 100% trust in your words. My eyes may deceive me, but your words can never deceive, can never be wrong. Because you are guided from Allah Ta'ala. It may be just your tongue, but the word of Allah Ta'ala is flowing through your tongue. So it can't be wrong.